This is Neil from Insight with Joe Trevors. Joe Trevors is an expert in the behavioral therapy, mindfulness, and a lot of you may be asking that are watching this, why are we associating with such a critter? Because
that question has been asked,
right?
Maybe not just by your people, but
right. And you know what? That's the question that I want to get into tonight is, what does mindfulness have to do with nutrition and lifestyle? Why is it so important? Why is it that someone like myself, who's been in the industry for as long as I have, sees the value of someone like you and the services you provide and the expertise that you have? Why is it so relevant in a field that really is about the body, not so much about the mind?
Mm. And it's a loaded question, right? Mm-hmm. We could do a whole series of shows on this. It would run
for
a year. There's no question. And as you and I have talked about before this show many times over the past couple of years, I see you as one of the guys who touches a lot on this when not a lot of other people do. And people can take that for whatever it sounds like, me calling out the entire industry. Absolutely. Because really, and we've talked about it even on some of the shows and in some of the recordings inside your group, everything that we're doing is tied to the mind. Everything that our body does is tied to the mind. Nothing that can happen in our body happens without something, right, firing up here.
Yeah.
So the challenge is that, to reframe it for some people, I saw a quote today or a speaker today who was saying, stop setting goals. Start instead setting intentions for habits. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's, if you remember, it's what we were talking about in one of the posts the other day when I was saying about building habits and the time frame that it takes. So folks, listen, the whole mindfulness thing is not just about, meditation. It's not just about sitting quietly on a mountain peak for 3 weeks. It's not just about sitting and saying om and, losing 40 pounds, or it's not all about any of that hokey kind of stuff that I get a lot of questions about. And I make fun because I do get questions about it. And listen, I'm not teasing anybody who asks me questions, because if you're not asking questions, then you're not growing and you're not learning. So,
right.
But it is humorous, and I have to laugh at myself sometimes because, people just don't know what it is. Right. But look, mindfulness is absolutely as simple as being aware mm-hmm. of what you're eating today, being aware of what you're eating, right? Being aware of this silver tea or white tea. I mean, I taste the flavor. I'm kind of in the moment when I'm drinking it. I'm aware of everything from, as it's going down my esophagus. I mean, and that's kind of an advanced level of mindfulness in the grander sense of 2,500 years ago and what it is today, in our civilization. But it can be as simplistic as, hey, listen, instead of having these chips, which I instinctively reach for out of habit now, right? It's part of my personality. I have plain Lay's chips every Tuesday evening while I watch, something that's on TV on Tuesday evenings. And that has become part of who I am in my mind.
Right.
But instead I stop because I'm mindful now. Right. And as I'm walking to the pantry for the chips, which now tells you where I keep my chips, as I'm walking to the
intervention.
Why are six other people trying to join this? wait a minute. But as as they're walking to the pantry, they pause, right? Because they're mindful now. They're not acting out of habit, right?
Who was it, Joe, that said the logic resides between the synapses of action and reaction? So the gap between action and reaction is where logic is where we become aware, right?
Yeah. And if nobody knows, I'll say it was me, but it absolutely was not. But that's the thing, right? And that's the thing about all of this mindfulness and everything that we have. And for those who didn't catch, maybe if you're not inside the group,
you should be
first and foremost. Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to go off on a huge tangent on that, but for $37, I mean, to be able to be inside with, all of us experts and a group of supportive self, people who are in there working for each other. But either way, moving on.
Thanks,
to
buddy.
The fact, well, you're welcome. That'll be $37. but to look at the fact that as we talked the other day and said, look, for us to have a thought or a mood or an emotion, right? To be experiencing something is fine. And I truly believe that. I believe that whether it's anger, whether it's, you know, sadness, whether it's grief, whether it's joy, whatever the emotion is, I am not one of these believers in, you know, you can only ever be positive, you can only ever be happy, you can only be ever what bullshit.
Yeah.
We have to be able to experience life. And if we're not experiencing everything that's in it, right, then we're wasting our time here. So I am a big believer in experience at all. However, and as it's been proven, and this is not some hokey throw a couple of stones against a wall somewhere and try to tell the future. This is like, when I talk this, I'm talking neuroscience has shown,
right,
that if we experience that emotion, but then experience that emotion over and over or continued for as little as only 3 to 4 days, it actually becomes part of a habit. Mm-hmm. And in that habit, we can go for some people as little as about 20, 21 days. For other people, it's 60, 90 days before that habit forms our personality. It right. becomes part of who we are, right? Yeah. Our genetics are reprogrammed and they can find it in there. Like they tested.
That's the epigenetic. That's where we get into epigenetics, right?
Absolutely. Right. And I mean, they looked at rodents in the 1920s, right? And they put them all in the same type of box, all in the same type of container, turned the lights on and off all at the same time every day. They did all of the same things every day, day in, day in, day out, right? And they kept retesting their genetics, and their genetics did not change in any way, shape, or form. None, not a change. And you and I, or all of us, had talked about telomeres at one point. So telomeres, which is how it in our genes, for those who don't know, it's how your lifespan is measured. So it kind of looks like the plastic part of the shoelace, right? So that's at the end of our genes. And so it actually shortened in those lab animals as they were doing the same things in and out every day in these little boxes. Skip ahead almost 100 years, but even back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, when they started testing more on humans and they started changing the things that people were doing in these tests, they could see that all of a sudden their genetics were reprogramming, right? There were changes that were being made through these differences, right? These different habits, these different emotions, these different actions, everything was moving through to reprogram our genetics. And then to take it another step further into the telomere part of it, and we're getting into four other shows ahead now, but to get into it, if we were able to, in our habits, to be able to change a lot of the stress and anxiety that we were under, to eliminate a lot of it, all of a sudden they were able to show that these telomeres, in as little as 2 days in some people, were actually growing.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, in some of them, they just didn't shorten.
Exactly, right?
So we were actually, we're actually lengthening our lifespan, our life expectancy, in actual genetics. This is not like sitting down hoping that it's going to. This is
This is actual quantifiable data.
Exactly, yeah. And it's measured. So you know, all of this stuff is vitally important. So being mindful of what we're doing, and to kind of circle back in the long way around to what you were saying, is that when we can take everything that we're doing and at least be mindful of it, be aware of it, make good choices through it, the chances of us staying where we are today, so whether it's overweight, whether it's chronic disease, whether it's, you know, just overall bad habits, you know, substances, whatever it happens to be, whether it's taking medications for the rest of our lives, right? And another topic that we can cover, you know, at some other time or later in the show, I'm not an opponent of medications.
No, nor am I.
In the short term or in the need and all of the stuff, I'm not a doctor, right? If the doctor tells you or a team of surgeons tells you you need these drugs, take them.
Yeah.
What I'm saying, though, is for the people who choose to take them for the rest of their lives without knowing whether or not they actually have to, without having looked at other opportunities, whether it's changing their lifestyle, you know, changing their mindfulness, getting up on yoga or meditation, you know, working with you with the nutrition, getting the exercise, all of these things can make changes, right?
So, but where does this tie into? See, I keep hearing in my industry, you know, genetics. My parents are overweight. And so what you're saying is that these genetics are basically behaviors that we pick up from our and basically turn on certain light switches within us and increase the potentiality of us becoming that. It's, you know, I've worked with alcoholics, and you know, the process in which they use to become sober is very, very similar to the process in which I use to help people control their food and moderate their food.
Yep.
It's habits, it's support systems, it's this and that, but it's got to do with up here. A lot of people I work with, they come in and they say, Neil, I know what to eat. I just can't do it. I just can't seem to do it. And it's because their behaviors, they're wiring and firing the wrong ways. And the only way that you can change that is by talking about it and thinking and becoming more mindful of the process of developing these habits. And that's why I see someone like you as such an intricate part of this insight movement in the community. Is people still don't see this. There's still brute force and ignorance. Well, if I just deprive the shit out of myself and I run the crap out of my body and I beat myself down and it's this total dictatorship, then I'm going to get the results that I want. And yeah, you're going to get the results, but you're never going to be able to sustain them, right? They're not. They're, you know, achievement. People say I achieve, but when you achieve something, it's you have it. It's yours to hold and keep, and yours to lose. Mm-hmm. But when you go barreling into a brick wall with your head down, piss full of momentum. Like, everybody talks about momentum and motivation. Like,
they until need someone, when,
right? But they need someone yelling at them or, you know, poking at them and prodding at them in order to do something that they should naturally be doing for themselves.
Right. And what kind of a life is that?
And exactly, right? You're constantly looking over your shoulder, your central nervous system, your body's at DEFCON 11 the whole time, and it's going to be scared as shit to have the results. It's like, oh my God, I've got these results. Holy crap. Like, it's like, you don't deserve it. You're scared of it because of what you had to do in order to achieve it.
Right.
Like, it's you just want to drop it as soon as possible. Right. And it's a facade.
And then they have to keep working harder and harder at it. And there's no one out there that's doing that won't tell you that they've had to keep increasing.
And then they burn out. Yeah, and then they crash.
Exactly.
Yeah,
then they crash. Absolutely. And so part of that is also what we've talked about many, many times, which is the whole fight or flight scenario, right? And people say, well, that's all whatever. I'm not scared. I'm not this and not that. Well, you know what? You're anxious. If you're not completely aware and if you're not completely in the now, and I'm going to touch a little bit on some mindfulness stuff right now that might be a little out there for some people to understand, and that's okay because it's new to you. So the first time that guy told you to eat red peppers, you probably were like, well, what do you mean? Is that a chip flavor? That's okay. That's okay. It takes some time. You have to ease yourself into this and take some time to study it. But listen, if you can be aware of where you are right now, and if you can be totally immersed in that without living in the future with the anxiety and the stress and the pressures that come from the future, or without all of the anxieties and the sadness and the, you know, everything that comes with the past, you won't be in what we call the fight or flight, right? You won't be worried about all of the different things that are firing and what's making your body do. Because as Neil can tell, any of you listening out there, is that with the fight or flight system, a whole lot of things happen to our bodies, right? They don't, our digestive tract and system gets basically like shut down almost completely. It's been shown, tests are showing this. And when that's happening, of course, nothing that you're eating is getting digested properly. Okay. So the nutrients aren't getting absorbed. So if your body's trying to grow muscle, it's not getting the proteins it needs. Your muscles aren't growing more muscle with protein and so on and so forth. And as all that works, it's not happening because it's not getting what it needs. You need to keep driving more in, right? Well, I'm going to eat two more chickens today and I'm going to lift more weights and I'm going to do all these things. Well, at the same time, your body's going, what the hell? Because even our immune system is suppressed, right? Completely suppressed when we're in that fight or flight scenario. So our body's not healing properly, you know, and then if bugs are getting in and if there's things going on and we're feeling even more and more beat down, look, it's just not a good thing. It's not. And so being able to be in the now and understand what you're doing with your mindfulness and with your mind and how you're treating your body and how you're going about your every day is what gives you that opportunity to take your best shot at everything from developing new habits to not feeling anxious all the time, which then causes, you know, how many people say to you, man, I'm really worried about tomorrow's meeting. And you say, oh, really? And they say, oh yeah, man, my stomach is completely shit. Oh my Lord, right, John,
like,
my stomach is just whatever.
The majority of the people that I work with are dealing with some type of, you know, anxiety, depression.
No question.
Right. And yeah. And what's happening, and you nailed it, the body's unable to absorb the nutrition. And we've been led to believe as long as I get it in my face, then it's good. Mm-hmm. And that's like, you know, that's half of it, right? Information without comprehension is useless.
Right.
So when you eat something, it's not what you eat, it's what you absorb. And when your body is in flight or fight mode, you know, you and I have been in those situations as first responders. You can't fart, you can't sneeze, you can't cough. Like, your system shuts down. Its only priority is to survive. And, you know, digestion is not even in the cards. And So this is it. Like, when you're so overwhelmed with what just happened, or you're overwhelmed with what's going to happen tomorrow, I always, in my mind, I picture it as like taking a big, long step, and you're out of balance. And the reason why people keep talking about momentum and motivation is the fact that the only way to keep upright when you're out of balance is through momentum.
Through momentum, yeah.
Right? And that's why people are so scared of slowing down, Joe, and being mindful and being present in the moment, because it means stopping, taking a deep breath, seeing where you're at, and maybe not liking where you're at. And then, but that's a powerful statement, is when you don't like where you're at, then that's the first step to changing where you're at. But you first need to realize where you're at. And people are so busy, Joe. They're so busy. I can't stop. I don't want to stop. I'm scared to stop. So I'm going to keep going because I don't want to fall over, because I got 1 foot in the past and I got 1 foot in the future. And the now is right here. And I'm totally straddling that bitch.
I'm not even, I
don't want to be there. I'm hovering over it, like hovering over a puddle that you're trying to step over.
Yep, absolutely. And so much of what I do, what I'm dealing with people, is battle their ego.
Right.
Right. It is. I mean, I go into battle with their ego, and I do it in a very questioning way, because it's how I work with people. Right. I don't propose to know all the answers. Sometimes I don't propose to know any answers. Right. I mean, there's days where I will still go to that pantry and grab a couple of chips. You and I both know that it happens, you know, maybe a lot less than it ever did.
But
you know,
that's how it happens. Right.
But then it keeps going. Right. So if I allowed that to still be a habit that I hadn't changed, you know, and thankfully to, you know, insight, I'm no longer like that, and I'm losing weight and feeling amazing, right? But at the same time, if I wasn't, those habits would still be habits, and more so, they would be part of my personality. And if you remember, and this is, you know, the work that I do involves a lot of self-reflection, and it's probably one of the most the hardest parts of doing what I do is that I'm constantly reflecting, and especially in the beginning it was a lot of self-realization, right? And there weren't always days that were filled with self-love, and that's just part of the journey. But as you know, I mean, there was a time, I mean, I would, if somebody said, you know, so what do you do? Or, you know, who's that guy? Or tell me a little bit about yourself. I might even describe myself as, I'm just the heavy, funny guy or whatever, because I had gotten up to like 242 pounds, which in reality wasn't all that heavy. But what was I doing? I was relating it to myself, right? It's who I had become. Because
it was part of your identity.
I had some of those actions and some of those emotions that I allowed to stay in long enough that they became parts of habits and everything, right? Parts of my moods, right? Mm-hmm. So you go from emotion to mood, mood to habit, habit to part of your personality, right? And that's how the string goes. And so I had a lot of those dangling strings that, you know, that I was tied to, and I was playing my own puppet master. But man, it was a horror show. Yeah. Right. And it's so easy to happen. And sure, you know, with me, there was, you know, obviously diagnosed PTSD, and there were all these things that I'm not dismissing in anybody that is going through that. A lot of us have been there.
Yeah.
But we don't have to stay there. So again, for us to be able to step back and say, all right, so listen, Joe's going to battle with my ego here, and they don't maybe know that that's what I'm doing, but as I'm asking some of their questions about the future, I'm asking some of their questions about the past, I'm drawing out a lot of what's causing their anxiety, sometimes anxiety that they don't think they have or they don't
know they have. It's systemic, yeah.
It absolutely is, right? It becomes so inherent that it's just part of their everyday. So they don't know that's I'm not anxious. I'm not stressed.
That's just every day. That's just my life. The way I feel. That's right? Their identity.
I'm performing I earn $320,000 a year. We have 4 cars. I have 2 houses. I have a beach house. We go away 7 times a year and I do this and I do this. That's just life, man. I'm not stressed. Bullshit. You're headed for a heart attack. Talk about stress, then your whole family will be stressed when they're
overcompensating,
right? And hopefully you've got some money set aside for, you know, when they put on your funeral for you, and I hope it's really nice. Or we can talk about all of this and where's it coming from. For a lot of us, when we think of ego, we think about, you know, the 80s and our parents, you know, talking about the neighbor who just bought this or just bought that and how horrible it was and look at how flashy they are and whatever. And so then ego for a lot of us became a real negative word, and it doesn't have to be. It's all on how we allow it to play out in ourselves, right? So you know, if people say, well, I have to work the extra hours because I can't lose that house, I can't afford not to drive that car, I can't this, I can't that, again, BS. You absolutely can. It's that you won't allow yourself to. So I do a lot of what ifs, right? What if you didn't have that car? What would your life look like without that particular car? And the first probably 8 times I get the answer, they're stepping down, right? Because up here, it's still the neighbors or it's, you know, whoever or wherever it is that they go with the vehicle, and it's a status thing. And I look, I'm not dismissing any of it, but it grows to be that way. And we can step down, and we can step down, and we can step down, and we can step down. So now we can also do that with people who are, as an example, going to start into nutrition, or maybe they're going to start exercising. Like maybe Joel inside the program is going to start getting them on some exercise and, you know, or some activity. But there's going to be some ego in that. Some of the people have probably asked you, and if not, you're going to get a lot of it. And I know over your 20 plus years, you've gotten lots of this. Who's going to know? Who's going to know that I'm doing this, by the way? Are there other people in here? Are they going to see me?
Or Joe, there's this. I can't go to the gym. I have to lose 20 pounds before I go. Or I don't know. I'm not familiar with the gym. So, you know,
Those are a couple of things. Those are ego. And it's also part of anxiety over societal expectations. Okay. So way back here somewhere, that person was at some point subjected to some sort of judgment from someone, whether it was someone at church or someone at school when they were young, or someone at, you know, someone else's wedding or a 20th reunion or something, where someone mentioned something or flat out teased them about how much weight they had gained. And it could have been one of those off the cuff kind of comments or a flippant comment that whether it was meant, you know, in a passing way or not, or meant as a hurtful thing, it was said. And so up here, a lot of the people and how they answer you, they'll tell you, oh, that didn't bother me. But if you read their eyes and if you read their facial gestures and their the way that they move their body,
the posture,
you can tell. If it really did bother them. And the problem is that they're going to play that over and over in their mind when they're doing anything. Right. Mm-hmm. So they're washing the dishes. It's in their mind, even when they don't realize. It's still back there in their subconscious, bouncing around a little bit when they're focused on other things. If they're mowing the lawn, whatever, it's there. And it plays on us. So as it's playing on us, it puts them in a position where they have now programmed their subconscious into believing that they can't put themselves out in front of other people. So they can't go to the gym without losing at least that first 20 pounds. They can't, because look, I've seen people who are in situations like that, that will actually get to the point where, you know, shakes and everything else, because they're so nervous about being in front of other people. Right. And
I've lived it, Joe. You know that I had a speech impediment, which led to self-mutism.
And it
came from this extreme anxiety that would come from being in front of people, and, you know, self-image disorder because of my weight and things like that.
Yep.
But I guess my question is how does mindfulness, how can someone with your unique expertise, like you know, there are other mindfulness coaches out there. There's people, I mean, it's a trending word right now on social media. Mm-hmm. What is it that you bring to the table that can, you know, in terms of being a better you, you know, and from like, how does someone like you link the body to the mind in regards to food? Like, what is it that you can offer? Say if I came to you and said, you know, I just can't seem to follow my meal plan, or I can't seem to follow the workout. I just can't seem to get that first foot. Like, I just can't seem to get one foot in front of the other and get a couple steps in. What is blocking me?
Yeah.
How would you deal with that?
And that's exactly where we would start, right? I would kind of, first of all, usually get into some feelings, and we would talk a lot with people around feelings. Like, so, okay, well, what did you feel when you got the meal plan? When did you get the meal plan? You know, well, it's in my portal as part of it, my membership, and, you know, I got it there, and it's custom designed for me. Okay, good. So Neil knows all about you. He asked all these questions. You know, there's 4 pages, 8 pages, whatever. You went through all this stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, great. So what, how did you feel when you got it? Oh, I felt okay. Okay. So you read it all and you felt really good about it. You felt okay about it. Like, what did you feel? Oh, well, no, there were a few things in there that, you know, that bothered me. Okay. What bothered you, and in what way did it bother you? And a lot of times we can start getting back to, whether it's, again, quite literally childhood stuff, it can be adult stuff that's more recent but has built some sort of anxiety around them, it can be some sort of situation that they've been involved in that is way out here in the future, or they think is going to come, and all of a sudden they'll say, well these particular meals, or this particular this, or that particular that. And the minute they say that, that plan is never going to work for them as long as they stay there. And it doesn't matter what you do with them and what you try to propose to them. They're never going to get out of that until they can figure out what that emotion is that's tied to either that particular mood or food.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to jump in here.
So go ahead.
What if they follow the meal plan? What if they follow the meal plan? What if they were told, okay.
Yep.
Because again, I'm going to go back to something that you and I can relate to. And I don't want to be too long in the tooth in this one.
No, that's
because
fine.
We're going to be doing a lot of videos.
Yep.
Paralysis by analysis. Mm-hmm. Like, you know that, you know, in regards to inflammatory cytokines, working with PTSD and things like that, that, you know, the overwhelmed feeling that the mind can sometimes manifest can originate in the body because of these, you know, the inflammation, you're fatigued, things like this. You know, the world seems heavier when you're tired.
Right.
It's so the physical fatigue. So what if you were to say, okay, you know, follow the meal plan, just for shits and giggles, just follow the meal plan and see what you feel like after a week of following it. Because a lot of people, they get the meal plans, they feel overwhelmed automatically. Mm-hmm. Right. And you and I, and again, a lot of that is the ego getting in the way. I want what I want, but I don't want to change, you know, what I'm doing. I just, you know, lottery, ticket scratchers.
Yeah.
Right. So imagine saying, okay, well, you know what, let's follow the meal plan for a week and let's talk about how you feel after you follow the meal plan for a week. Mm-hmm. Because I find that a lot of the people that in this particular community, because what they're doing is they're associating like the physical feeling of better to the mental feeling of better. And we do,
they
both connected, right?
Right.
But you know, not everybody does, because the thing is some people are eating for psychological reasons. They're not eating for any physiological reasons whatsoever.
Yep.
They taste, color, texture, smell, environment, you know, it's an experience as opposed to an actual logistical thing that your body needs in order to carry you from your bed back to your bed.
Good or bad. Yeah.
Right. So like, imagine if you said, okay, you know what, follow the meal plan and then let's get into this a week later, right? Let's meet next week and tell me what you thought of the meal plan after, because I find that too many people are projecting. There are too many people that already know how they're going to digest the food, how they're going to feel, what's going to happen. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm-hmm. And again, like, you know, before I would do a talk or before I'd answer the phone, I could just in my head, I can imagine how horrible it's going to go. And I can see myself stuttering before I even pick up the phone.
And then you do.
And then I do, right? So, you know, this is where a lot of the people that are in this program with Insight, where, you know, they've got some road under them or behind them, and they start to waver a little bit. Mm-hmm. The honeymoon stage is over. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's where someone like you can really, really be of use is, okay, well, why are you letting off the gas?
Right.
What is going on now that's preventing you, you know, that's keeping you chained, that's dragging you down? What is that weight?
So with a lot of people, as you know, it's that same, you know, when I talked about emotion to mood to habit, that 20-21 days is where a lot of people fall off of almost anything, right? Because that, again, is where that 20-21 days of habit kind of kicks in, right? Where if you can get past that. So leading up to it, there are a lot of things with mindfulness even that we talk about, it, like you were saying, like try that food for a week. Okay, well, to add to it, or what I would add to it if I was working with that person or talking to that person first would be, we would do a few things that are around awareness, okay, and providing they weren't displaying a lot of really pent up other things that we needed to address, right through anxiety or fear of the future or whatever it happened to be. If there wasn't, let's say that all of that was off to the side here and it was just some moderate everyday anxiety and then some reluctance to try to move past ego and to be able to work through this. And maybe a touch of fear of the future around, you know, what are people going to say? What if I tell people? What if I don't work this through? What if it doesn't happen? I've tried this a dozen times before with other people and it didn't work out or on my own. You know, all of those types of things, which are very real in this. Yeah. What we would do then is we would look at, all right, so listen, so there are a couple of things in mindfulness. One of them is body scans. You know, for those who take my big program, one of the very first things we do in the first session is talk about what we call a body scan, which is kind of going through your body and recognize how it feels. And it's sort of a little meditative. And it's in part to be able to bring you into a bit of a slower state, right? So to slow down your beta state, more into a beta alpha or almost an alpha theta if you can, but slow down everything in you, which takes away a lot of that anxiety, pulls you out of that fight or flight. But in that, we talk a lot about everything. So how are you feeling? How are you doing? And this leads me up to, even with people who are on a meal plan, to again, where we first started the show, tasting the food, feeling the texture of the food, understanding, you know, the smell of the food and all of those things. But when they're doing that, associating that taste or that texture or, you know, the smell with parts of what they were looking to do through all of this, right? What is this journey about for them? Why are they losing the weight or gaining the muscle or, you know, overall
getting healthier,
getting healthier? Like what was it about this journey that was driving them? What was truly driving them? No, not just, you know, everybody says I should be thinner or everybody says this or the doctor said that.
Yeah. That's dogma. That's
exactly right. But what is it? Like, okay, so you went and saw the doctor last week and the doctor said you needed to lose 40 pounds or else. Okay, so then you called Neil and you joined Insight and here you are and Neil's put a plan together. But why did you call? You didn't call because the doctor wasn't standing over you with a gun to your head, right? No. All right. Well, then what was it? What triggered? What tripped? What made you say yes? Okay, if we can connect with that and we can keep that here in the more conscious part of our mind on an everyday basis when we're being mindful.
Right.
We can attach that to some of the foods and some of, again, the flavors and the smells and all of those things.
I've got a story for you, Joe. I'm just going to jump in. I've got a story for you. Years ago, I was in a one-on-one consultation with a physician. Mm-hmm. This physician had some health issues and anyway, struggled with a bit of hypocrisy. They felt like, you know, I'm taking as much medication as a lot of my patients are and I'm charged with their health and I'm a bad example.
Sure.
Blah, blah, blah. And he had habits. He had these habits that he didn't want to let go. So he was using me and my knowledge to try and circumvent those habits, like not eliminate the habits, but what do I need to do around the habits so that I can change everything but the habits?
Okay.
And all right. Okay. But those habits were getting in the way of his health.
So
he received some disturbing news one day. He wasn't able to go away with his grandson to a hockey tournament as son was accepted in this elite hockey school and there was a tournament going on and he was going to fly and go. Anyway, because of his health, his mobility would have been an issue. And he was told that, you know, we'd love for you to go, but honestly, we can't, the pace is going to be too high. You can't go. Mm-hmm. He was disappointed. He was upset. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I remember him coming in, and, you know, of course, sometimes the messenger, you know, gets mm-hmm. shot. Mm-hmm. So he takes it out on me and he just sure. lets loose. And you know what? I felt really good that he felt safe enough to be able to do that.
Yep, for sure.
And anyway, he said, he looks at me, he goes, Neil, how the hell can you eat broccoli? Like, honestly, what does broccoli taste like? Like, who eats broccoli all the time anyway? And I thought about that for a second, you know, mm-hmm. all right. I thought about it. I'm like, really? I never really thought about it, you know, over a long period of time, but not like this, because I've never really had to articulate it. I'm like, you know what? Broccoli tastes like me playing with my kids after work, a long day of work. It tastes like me being able to kiss my kids on the forehead, putting them to bed at night. It tastes like my kids saying, Daddy, you're so strong. Daddy, I bet you could do that, right? That's what broccoli tastes like to me.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely right.
Right. And I used it, you know, it was broccoli that he said, but to me, that was a come to Jesus moment. That was like, you know what? Yeah. Like right. I have a different perspective of food now. I link it to something else. Like, you know, it's a positive reinforcement, which makes, like, when I was obese, and I had the speech impediment and everything, I couldn't eat a vegetable to save my life, to the point where I wasn't even invited to come over to friends' house for mm-hmm. dinner because mm-hmm. I would physically gag.
Right.
And it's funny how that mind shift changes, but the mind shift changed after I started eating broccoli, because then, like, and some people do that. And I talk about this right. in nutrition. Some people start with exercise, and then the exercise prompts them to eat better.
Right.
Some people eat better and then it prompts them to exercise.
Right.
So there's different ways and you know, methods of access here.
Yep.
But really, yeah, like I think the big thing in the overtone here is to be able to connect something to what yep. it is that you're doing that you believe in, because then you'll do it when no one's watching.
And the negative doesn't work, right? So how you could have completely derailed him, and you've no doubt seen many people either do this themselves, or maybe other people in the industry do it to people, and I'm not going to say maliciously, but it happens,
yeah.
Is that you could have said, you know what broccoli tastes like? Broccoli tastes like not being told by your kids that you can't go see your grandkid playing hockey, because right. then it becomes that negative programming, right?
Exactly.
That turns the emotion and the mood and so on, and everything then is negative. And
it becomes adversarial.
And, yeah. and while it might work for some, and it has, and I've seen it, while it works for some, it's short term. Exactly. Yeah. So eventually that all turns, and either something good happens or the bad gets even worse, and it all becomes complete and utter bullshit, and I am out, right? So yeah. So what you did there was brilliant in the fact that you were able to relate it to something that was more positive, and it, you know, it wasn't completely goal oriented, right? Like what broccoli tastes like is you losing 30 pounds and you do
right.
this
yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
within
yeah.
the next 27 days or whatever, right? It yeah. was
just three easy payments,
right? Yeah, exactly, right? 7-minute abs. It was instead an emotion. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of, even in mindfulness, you know, mindfulness, we talk about, you know, kind of being, I don't want to say empty, but actually exploring and enjoying and experiencing everything. Yeah. And so what you gave him was experiences in the future
yeah.
tied to what he was going to do today, which, you know, is eat the broccoli. Right.
Right.
And then broccoli would turn into other fruits and vegetables and so on that he
ate his broccoli. And that's the thing, like,
right.
He dropped 146 pounds
wow.
over 2 years.
Amazing.
Took up running. Like he never let that get in the way again.
Right.
Because again, like sometimes I think people just need a focal point on the horizon. Like if, you know, and broccoli was that focal point where
right.
if he attached himself to broccoli, then that broccoli gave him, it's almost like Dumbo and the feather.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That broccoli represents a better me. That represents me being happy. It represents, so the more I introduce broccoli, then all of a sudden it's what's pathological, mm-hmm. right? It's it grows and this is it. And then you start attaching other behaviors and other things to positive things.
Yeah.
Just, and you're right. Like we could attach them to negative things, but it holds us in the past.
Right.
If we attach them to positive things, then it gives us hope for the future,
right?
And allows us to focus right now. Okay, right. If I can eat this broccoli right now, like if I brush my teeth tonight, it's not going to make any difference. But if I brush my teeth multiple nights,
every night, exactly,
it'll make the difference.
Or almost every night, at least, right? Kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
So, and that's what a lot of, you know, again, when we talk about a lot of the things that we do in mindfulness, there are times when someone is so attached to something in the past or so tied to an outcome in the future, that we need to help them release from that. And that's probably maybe one of every 2 to 3 to 4 people, you know, that I talk to. But some of them are really as quick and keen as just being able to help them slow down and be a little bit more in the now and attach some of those positive emotions or those, you know, at least more of them than the upsetting emotions. And then we're able to backtrack from that. Like if we can kickstart them there, we can backtrack through a series of sessions and talks about, you know, releasing some of the other things, understanding how to handle those other things when they circle back around. Right. Yeah. Because I mean, if I talked about this, I think, in a video the other day about going to see Grandma when we're upset and she feeds us ice cream. Right. And look, that's fine. You know, I understand that. And you know, and Graham, when I was, you know, 6 or something, my Nana, you know, would have fed me some ice cream or whatever. And I get that. And between 0 and 6 is when we go through all of our subconscious programming, right? And it becomes part of who we are unless we change it later in life. And so if everything that I associate with being upset now or being sad now or hurting my knee or doing whatever it is that evokes right. those emotions,
knee-jerk reaction
is tied to Ben and Jerry's, then, you know, then away we go, right? And so the people who are still doing that and can't explain why, right? If you could query almost everybody who runs and buys Ben and Jerry's late at night and you say, like, what are you buying that for? Well, I'm just really upset.
Or they're high.
Or they're high. But yeah, well, Canada. But if you ask them though, and it's okay, so why Ben and Jerry's though? You're really upset. So why Ben and Jerry's? But I don't know. I crave ice cream when I'm upset. Okay. Well, what is it about the ice cream that makes you feel better? Right. And so then you can exactly. Right. And that's a lot of what I do on the everyday. But if people aren't willing to kind of look at the opportunity to do that, that's where we kind of hit that impasse. And then I have to dig deeper, but you know what? I'm happy to do it because, man, being able to see people like you have over 20 years in a very similar manner, being able to see people when they have those breakthroughs, even if they're this big, man, even if they're just
that,
like,
purchase point, Joe, it's that mangled vehicle. You start to see, okay, we got a chance here. We can get in and get them.
We can get them. Right. And that's all it is. And look, I, again, we're going to do a lot of these and I don't want to keep this one extra long. So we'll wrap up. But you know, the thing that I want everybody to understand, cause I've had a lot of these questions, especially since coming inside your group, I know there's been a little bit of hesitation by some. People don't really fully understand it. They're not really sure how it can help. They don't really know what they want to tell me or what they don't. Mm-hmm. Just message me. Just ask.
You know, I had that conversation today with someone, Joe.
Did you? It's yeah. So,
yep. You don't know what you don't know.
And exactly. Right.
You're in a group, and especially like myself, I've got 20 plus years of experience. I've dealing with my own nutrition for 33 years.
Exactly.
If I say that someone like you is invaluable, then that alone should carry some weight, you know, because again, no pun intended. Yep. A lot of the people within the group and the majority of the people in North America have at some point tried and failed at losing weight. They've lost it and they've regained it, or they didn't quite get to where they need to be.
Yep.
And we need to start asking ourselves why, and we need to start thinking outside the box, and we need to start to refer to people who weren't previously referred to, because there's a saying, never take swimming lessons from a drowning man. So, you know, for people who keep listening to these people that have never had weight issues, never experienced eating disorders, or have never walked a mile in your shoes, and we're listening to them and we're listening to the professionals that they endorse, and the cost of these things is just, you know, that they're in it for the short term, because no one can, you know, and when you're looking at this type of change, it's a change that's done over time, and it's through trust and community and people like myself and Joe within this community, and Joel and Ben and Greg, we're here to earn your trust. So this is an evolving thing. You're not going to come out of the gate, you know, full of piss and vinegar, only to land flat on your ass halfway through this. We're here to take you all the way. And if it means telling you to slow down, take a deep breath, be mindful, think about where you're at and where you're going, then we're going to do that. And we're going to do it in a way that you're going to think it was your idea, right? And that's
because there are a million ways, right? There are a billion ways. It is each our own way, which is exactly what you've done here at Insight, which is the same thing, you know, knowing everybody who's here and doing custom menu plans, and Joel looking at custom workouts for people who have certain holdbacks, you know, maybe a bad leg or something that's going on.
And just being accessible, Joel. We don't know what we don't know until we come face to face with it. So imagine having someone with your expertise where you're just a message away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I can say before we close this off is, you know, take a chance just out of curiosity, because of the success rate that we have been, you know, privy to, you know, connect with Joe just to see what he's capable of doing, what he can bring out. It's one of our mantras with Insight is we don't give answers. We inspire better questions. And Joe is right on that page. He's about finding the truth. And the only way he can find the truth is digging and you discovering. It's your discovery. It's your journey. So anyway, I like this, Joe. This is the first one, and it's going to be the first one of many. And we'll get into specific topics and things like this as we go.
Yeah, and that'll be a lot easier as we dig, right? It's so much easier after we set the stage to be able to get into.
We'll funnel it in.
Yeah, and people inside the group can ask for topics to be covered and so on, and we can do a lot of that.
Exactly.
So I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate you having me inside the group, man. It's a huge honor to be able to be here and kind of see some of these people growing and heading off on these journeys. And I mean, look, you went through years a lot earlier than I did mine, but I'm still in the middle of mine, and I'm loving it. Again, mind and body, and everything that you guys have done, and then you know, on my journey on the mindfulness side, man, to pair up the two is it's pretty cool. So,
and it's cool to watch you, Joe, because you're coming to the same point from a different direction. You began with your mind, and now you're working on your body. And for me, it was the opposite. It was the body, and then there was always a lagging part. And you know, in order to have balance, you got to work at both ends. And the body and the mind are those. It's the teeter totter. So, okay.
Good, man.
I'll see you inside the community. And anybody who's watching this video today, if you have any interest in finding out more, check us out at insighthf.com. You know, go on and take a look and leave a comment or get a hold of us. We're easy to find. Thanks, Joe.
See you inside, pal.
See you, buddy.